Excision number 22623, wheel 6.
Sid Leach, reel 6.
Right. Well, we were now in this area in the woods where we were all billeted in bivouacs, and the weather was absolutely terrible. I can recall now our first day after we had come off and from the back from the mountain area, where we hadn't gone up, but the guards had, and we'd been sent to them to augment and help them, but they'd had to withdraw, and we'd moved back to these woods, and there we were billeted. And I can recall now, on our day after we got up there, it was a frightful, terrible, cold, rain, miserable, and the sight of morning sick parade. Practically all of the battalion were sick, colds, flu, and this is my memory of it. The medical officer, and there's only one, as you know, in a battalion, reviewing the site, and then ordering that the tea and the sugar rations from all the companies be sent. And there was this gigantic brew of hot, sweet tea. That was the dosage for the whole of the sick parade and back to the ambulance. Yes. And that's just a peculiarity, you know. Now, then, while we were there, of course, General Templer, of course, had to plan. And it took about a month to replan this new attack. Everything had to be built, gun lines, jeep trails made. Remember that the track had been mined as the guards came down. So we couldn't use that going back again until it had been cleared. So it was obvious that the mountain had to be climbed to get to it. There was a monastery up there. And the plan was, of course, for 167 Brigade, which was my brigade and night town fusiliers, would attack through up the mountain, and 169 Brigade, I think I've already said there was a monastery at the top, would be responsible for coming around in a different area to take the monastery. Weather was frightening. That meant, of course, in those days, they hadn't got a lot of mules. And that we now entered into what was, we were to learn what mountain warfare was. And in this country, of course, very few of us knew what that was like. We hadn't even done any training and that sort of thing. And the plan involved, of course, building jeep trails through to get so supplies could come nearer and nearer up to the mountain. And we found ourselves going out and assisting the REs and that sort of thing in creating these trials and building them and shoveling them out. And I can always remember Templer coming one day, and he was a stickler for the corrective discipline in normal circumstances. I always remember him coming up, and of course every time one sort of saw him, even though you're out on a working party, everyone is when they saw him stop to throw up a salute and that sort of thing. And I always remember him coming across this day and saying, "We haven't got bloody time for that," and grabbing a shovel. And for a moment or two, yes, "We haven't got bloody time for that," he says, grabbing a shovel and shoveling away. And spending a few moments with the boats and off away again.
Time for what?
For all this business of every time you saw him stopping and not carrying on with the work, you see, time was getting short. But out, had you done that away on a rest area or something, you would have... Yes. Right. Now then, just leading up to that, We were continuously, clothes and everything was wet and that sort of thing. And we used to go up into a little village, I think it was called Orchy, in the morning, company by company, cart in, the blankets wet through. And it was an air, sort of a hideout area, where they used to light huge fires, and we used to try and dry our blankets, but invariably the next day there'd been the same process. While we were there, I can remember them, they sent up the Irish Guards band was touring in Italy at the time, and they came up from Naples and gave us a concert or two. And I can remember Brigadier Firth, who was our 167, coming up one day and to meet the brigade. And we were cluttered up into this biggest little hall in this area in which we were in. And he'd come, obviously, to tell us about the plans for the second Battle of Monte Camino, in which we were to be a crucial part. And having told him all, told everyone and explained, he asked any questions. And this is a peculiarity of Wolf. And up a bright spark, so we'd seen no naffy van or anything like that in the air, nothing had come up. And some bright spark there, yes, Cockney voice, yes. What's happened to our bloody buns and wads? We had seen nothing of these. We had, in that case, in that time, we had a Church of Scotland van. The ladies used to come round the Abbey. And he said, after a while, he said, well, you're moving out tomorrow night. He said, you'll get your buns and wads tomorrow night, which we did. Amazing, we were. Next day, we packed and we moved. And we moved to a hideout area, San Clemente. The area had previously, the Yanks had been in it, but they'd moved away. And we found out after that the Germans had cleared that particular area. And we moved. It was a hideout area, and we moved into it at night. And on our tracks and our trail to get to the town, true and sure enough, that night there was the van doling out wads to the blokes as they passed by, all cluttered up. We had moved to this area, and one of the things, of course, which had occurred and which now comes to light and I can remember, is the fact we had to carry everything that we needed probably to last us several days. And I presume who had thought of it, I don't know, with the general staff, but I can always remember that about in this sort of area of time before the second Battleton, and I have said it took about a month to replan, an order had gone through to England and back to this country to create us a pack so that we could get, and that was the first time that this burger pack arrived, which I think is almost the same as they use now. And that arrived about a fortnight before, maybe a little bit less than before we were going to actually get into action. And I can always remember we spent laborious hours learning how to pack and as much to pack and all that sort of thing. And it was quite a drill to pack it and to each man to put it onto each other's back and that sort of thing. And we found that they'd calculated the height of the mountain and for every soldier, and so we had an additional allowance of chocolate and that sort of thing to pay. That was that particular part of it. So Bergen packs came into being then, and as a further sort of thing about what happened to them, because there's lots and lots and lots and lots of mountains all the way out to come onto, after we'd crossed, ventured across and come back down, they were taken from the town, and that's how they proceeded on and on and on until much larger stocks, obviously, for the army were created. So that's a drill we had to learn, how to pack, what to pack. And in the plan, and when we got to this hideout area, we were there for quite a few days. And it's a very, very small village, and there's no inhabitants there. And of course, the whole area was basically overlooked in daylight from all these high ground, these various mountains. So of course, we were in a hideout area, so there was no movement out of these empty places and houses which you've got during daylight hours, and no smoke from the... On one of the nights of there, I remember we were rather worried and surprised when we noticed that it was noticed by one of the companies, which of course were in another part of the village, that a German patrol was patrolling in the air, but fortunately they didn't come into the village. While we were there, and in the few days we were there, one of the companies found a mass grave, which of course didn't endear us very much to the Germans when we found. Later on, reading in the Fusiliers, Once a Fusilier, Always a Fusilier, the book after the war, the reason was given that the Germans had shot all these people who were buried there because they hadn't inform them about the Yanks when they were in their patrol activity. Anyway, that didn't endear us to the Germans. As, of course, it got nearer and nearer, and then by that time it had got to, it was certainly the end of November, and if I recall rightly, it was round about the 2nd of December that we actually started. In the meantime, patrols at night, not necessarily from us, but had patrolled it to the air, the basic area of the mountain, in the area in which we were going to, and had found, of course, that compasses weren't any use at all. The needles, when they got there, the needles were just wobbling backwards and forwards. So a means of getting to this mountain and getting up and getting there in the right became a problem. And that's how I came to take over one of the platoons as platoon commander, because the officer, Lieutenant Jones, was taken from it and detailed as a taping party, the idea being for the party to follow up behind the bell patrol and tape the area. But I have to say now that someone had thought, and it was the first time that we'd ever seen, and it was used very often much after, thought of sighting a Bofors gun in the area back there, and every 2 minutes, and this did occur every 2 minutes throughout that night, it fired what we called an onion shot. That was an onion. And wherever you were over the mountain, you could, because we found the tape, of course, broke as you clambered another, it was at night time. This thing that guided with us, it shot over just over the top of the mountain Camino, it gave you a guide, and that's what really got us to the point 8819, I think it was called, where in the morning we were due to go in on the attack.
Onion shot?
Yes, yes. It's an orange glow shell, and that's exactly what it looks like.
How is it related to an onion then? How does onion come into it?
Yeah. Well, that was something which we just called it ourselves. And however, the actual, and I say on the second, as it came, we moved out. We had then got a new CO. I think he'd come to us from the Queen's, a gentleman called Lieutenant Colonel Sykes Wright. And he, of course, instructed that Lieutenant I was one of the senior sergeants in the battalion at the time, would command this platoon. It wasn't the platoon in the company in which I'd been with all the time since I joined the 9th Battalion. So, of course, I thought it was a bit unfair that they should have somebody that the chaps, technically speaking, didn't know, leading them on this particular thing.
What number was the platoon?
The platoon.
What number?
The platoon at that time wouldn't have been, I think it was 12. And they wouldn't know me, I wouldn't know them, but of course it was overruled, orders were ordered, and so I became platoon commander, and under me was Lance Sergeant McKean, very friendly now all the time, Lance Sergeant Middleditch. On the diet in which we started, the object was that we would make our way to the base of the mountain, and the oxens, our seven oxen jocks, who had been in battle before and were down to only about two companies. Their task was to secure a base at the bottom of the mountain, a secure base at the bottom of the mountain for us to start. And again, it was in the areas of the San Clemente. And we moved forward under darkness. I think we left San Clemente around, by the time we reached the base of the mountain, it would have been around about 7 o'clock area, or 6 or 7. Now the plan for the battle was that the 8th Battalion would come up from an area a bit further round the mass, and their CO would be the person to actually be in charge of the 2 battalion attack. Because they would be the only person, they would be the only person to know whether everything was up in line. 2 battalion attack were up in the air, ready when daylight came in the morning for the attack to go in. Well, it took us. The books, you read a book and you'll see it says it took us about 8.5 hours. In actual fact, it was far more than that. Climbing. This precarious climb, and sometimes fellas lost, and dragged back, and with all this load they were carrying. But when, this signal shot came over the mountain, then most everyone, although you'd lost probably some of your platoon, they then somehow or other managed to gather themselves and continue on this line. Around about, I should think it's 5 o'clock in the morning, we'd reached an area where we thought it was where we had to be ready for the morning attack. And just a little on the side of the mountain, a very, very sparse wood, just a few trees and that dark. We, the 9th Battalion, were in that area, had reached that area, but the 8th Battalion, on their advance to begin their climb, had been stomped by the Germans, and they'd lost a considerable number of people. That had disorganized their march. And as it was drawing, the first streaks of dawn were drawing, all they'd got up in the rear of us was one company. Y Company, I think it was, under a Major Thomas. So that quandary left a quandary. Our own colonel, Sykes Wright at that time, of course, which hadn't been with us very long, was then left with a problem. It wasn't particularly his particular battle, although of course he knew the drill, because the 8th Battalion's CO would have commanded and ordered the battle. But I always remember that the message went back that, you know, it's getting like what was supposed to happen now, and wireless back, and Firth, who's our brigadier there, obviously said, if you're cut up there with your trousers down in daylight when dawn breaks, you'll never get back off. So what was ordered was, our own colonel of course was then left with the problem of organising quickly this attack too. Point 819, I think it was called, and which he did. The order then was that my particular company and my own end would do the flank attack round to get round this the side of the mountain and round at this top where this little plateau was, and the others would storm it up a bit more and that sort of thing. It was very peculiar, and as daylight broke and began and visions and that became more prominent, so we went in, 9th Battalion and one plus one company of the 8th. And I always remember as we went round, going round these woods and the mountain then began to slope down and slope up round to the back of this ridge. On our journey up, we'd had taken, the battle patrol had gone in front of us and had taken a few German prisoners, but not many. And as we went round this business, a sight met us, a most horrible sight, really. And it became the focal point and for the maps that were eventually made for people as a guideline to the events and a reference point for the gunners. As we moved around in the daylight, right, there was this huge, great, bare backside of a German soldier out there, of course, bodies swelled very, 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 very great and much, huge, unrecognizable things. And a bear, and obviously, the mountain obviously been stonked and shelled in previous days, proprietary to the attack going on, and he'd been caught, obviously relieving himself, obviously. And, well, it was given a name, Bear Arse Ridge, and that was what we had. And Spike Middleton, who died a little while ago, who was in the RAs, or in one of his books, he asks and recalls this, but didn't know how it got its name. I've often thought that I'd have liked to nurture him and told him, well, I could tell you how it got its name. But battle had started in the break of dawn, and as we moved round this side, they obviously then, there's always, and there must be, considerable noise of blokes stumbling, of rocks moving and that sort of thing, basically heavy loaded. We'd offloaded the Bergen packs round and left them round there and there, and there we were just going into a normal attack. And my particular platoon I was leading was on right on the outside flank, coming round this way. And as we moved round there, of course, Germans, lookouts and that sort of thing, we were met with some considerable spandau crossfire. Before we'd gone up to this mountain, the battalion, the companies had been made up with Predator Strength. The Bren carrier platoon had been split up and had been sent to infantry companies, which they couldn't be used until people, personnel from headquarter companies had been there to augment and make her a little bit more up to strength. And I had one of the sections led by this, was led by a corporal from the carrier platoon. And we went in and put our sections out as we went in, and it became apparently, as the Germans sort of woke up in this early morning and the mist were clear, that there was about five different Spanders firing or crossfire. And the only thing I remember, I wanted this particular section to come up and into another position. But the Germans, while they were up there, of course, their mode, they were very clever. In the time they'd occupied it, they had the same weather as we had to contend with previously to them. They used to blow out caves into the rocks, which gave them a certain amount of protection. And in the area in which this particular section got, there was one of these, and they were cowered in it as soon as they... And I wanted them, and I always remember that I sent the runner over to tell him to come out, and I wanted this Bren gun, really. Didn't particularly want him in that sense, as I found that out, because he refused to come. And of course, if the section commander didn't, neither would the rest, would they? That was how you found things in those days. And I always remember sending the Bren gun in the platoon headquarters, face your gun down and tell him, and you go again and tell him next time I'll fire. Which he went back, still with the lucky, the bullets were coming mostly over us, but they were still these missing us. But he didn't come. Fortunately, the Bren gunner, which I wanted, who was a very, very first-class chap, he did leave, and he came, and we were able to get in another position, and eventually we found that we were able to advance more round.
Who were these men cowering in the cave?
Mm-hmm.
Who were the men cowering in the cave?
A section of our own people, from my own platoon. But of course we were split, you see, and as soon as the fire came, he just got down. It did have percussions later on, because as it moved out, we moved round, and the rest of the company and the rest of the thing eventually succeeded in taking this particular area. And our particular air bag was, we had for three of our platoon killed, we eventually found ourselves with about 21 prisoners and who appeared at that time to be under the command of a Red Cross officer or something from the German army. He seemed to be controlling them. He certainly had a revolver, which we took them. Well, of course, we pursued on.
How did you get these prisoners?
Well, from various boulders and that sort of, they just come out, build themselves up and sort of, and they came out of another cave just round which we eventually occupied ourselves. In the confusion, and the battalion then, at that particular stage, had of course pursued with the fight, in which of course it was obvious that we had sort of gained that particular point 819, and the company was split out and that sort of thing. I believe at that particular time that Y Company of the eighth generation, and then I think it started to move higher up the mountain towards the monastery part, which was some distance round and round the top. And our own company commander, Stan Warner, he had moved a bit higher up, so he could, of course, basically be overlooking partly of what we were doing. Anyway, at this particular point, and this sergeant got an American award, Sergeant Jackson, which was part of the section commander.